Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The first landfill was created in 500 BC in ancient Greece. That's according to the EPA. Where residents, not at the EPA, but in ancient Greece, where residents were required to lug their garbage about a mile outside of town to dump it. Landfills have become much more sophisticated, but in the end, they are all pretty much holes in the ground. The trick now, as we run out of space or land becomes more precious in other ways, is how to dump less. And that's where recycling comes in. This hour, we talk about recycling with a twist, learning how some are doing it differently. Joining us first is Karen Ferris. She's founder of Big Green Head, the organization behind the Green on the Green event in Worthington on Saturday. The idea is to help families, businesses, and community take small green steps. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you, Anne.
Let's talk about the small green steps and how Big Green Head came along in the first place. I know you were a trash picker, but there's more to it than that.
Thank you for that introduction.
That's okay.
Trash picking is how Big Green Head came to be. It started as a hobby, and Anne and I live in the same neighborhood, so she knows how good our trash can be put on the curb because we have professional trash pickers. So people put lots of goods out. Mm-hmm. And I always did it as a hobby and as a creative outlet. But when the economy got really bad in 08, 09, I found myself actively looking for good trash that I could then sell on consignment to put food on the table for my family. So what sounds like a story of, bad times actually is the reason why Big Green Head was created, because out of that trash picking came how could I make money from this? And I had a group of girlfriends, good girlfriends, who said, you should do a mommy blog and tell everyone how you're fixing up all these cool things and selling them. And I was very naive to think that if I wrote some good words that people would want to buy an ad, which is hilarious if you are a blogger. So I then went and found someone who could help me kind of clean up my blog and turned it into a website. And that's when Big Green Head was created.
One of the things I remember when you first told me about this was the idea that so many of the people you knew, people you socialized with, thought that the whole ecology thing was just too much of a hassle. And these were people who had the ways and the means, and they were hassled by it.
Right. And what I have found, so when Big Green Head, I created the character, and if you haven't seen what he looked like, people think, well, what's a Big Green Head? So you can just go to the website, biggreenhead.com. He's a monster with large teeth and a smile. But when I started introducing him to people on social networks, I got a tremendous amount of problems sent my way from moms volunteering on a soccer field with lots of water bottles they knew were going to the landfill, and they didn't know, what can we do about this, Big Green Head? Or downtown businesses that served beer and wine and had glass that were getting thrown away. And that kind of nicely segues me into the Green on the Green event. Mm-hmm. It was such an overwhelming concern for a community that I lived in, Worthington, that I went to the schools and I went to the city. And the idea came about, why don't we bring awareness to the entire community? And maybe out of this, we can solve some of these problems. And that's how Green on the Green was born.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Karen Ferris. She's a blogger and founder of Big Green Head, which is the organization behind Green on the Green in Worthington. You can go to greenonthegreen.com mm-hmm. For more information about that, or biggreenhead.com, .org. For more information about the organization, the nonprofit organization that she founded 4 years ago. If you have any ideas yourself about recycling, we want to hear pro-recycling ideas. Give us a call. What are your recycling secrets? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're looking for recycling ideas today. How do you recycle? Do you have any good hints? You can also go to our Facebook page and post your comment there, and we'll read it on the air. So, Big Green Head started out as a blog. It's now a nonprofit organization. How did the city take to it? How did the schools take to the idea of the Green on the Green and Big Green Head?
The city of Worthington and the school district have been extremely supportive, and it's also caught the attention of teachers. There's always people that have a passion, and it draws out the passion. And I have a feeling some of the calls and emails we'll get today are people who either have a problem that they want to ask and say, I don't know what to do with this, and it drives me nuts. Or they're going to tell us of a really innovative solution for something that they have discovered, which, of course, we would want to share. And that's what Big Green Head is all about, is sharing information, taking those little steps, and celebrating the successes, even something small like giving up your paper cup for coffee every day and using a ceramic mug.
Do some people resist that. They think it's stupid. They don't think it's going to make a difference.
I think that's where the education comes in. And I know that from experience. You know, I didn't start out our motto is do green. It's not just for tree huggers anymore. If I'm talking to tree huggers and preaching to the choir, they are always thinking of the environment. It's the, I don't want to say regular folks because that would be insulting. But so I'm a mom of three, married, live in a house. My kids like their electronics. You know, I've got grass that I need to keep looking nice, although that's questionable if you drive by my house. But to introduce alternatives to people. So educating them on the why. So this was given to me, this example, if I can say this. When you treat your lawn with chemicals, someone gave this vision to me that I can't get out of my head. If every neighbor of yours that treated with chemicals just took a 2 to 5 gallon bucket of chemicals, walked down to the Olentangy and just dumped it in there, if we all did that, wouldn't that speak volumes to you as to what we're doing to our waterways with runoff? And, you know, I can't bring myself to treat with chemicals with that visual in my head. And there are alternatives out there. And those companies will make it if we support them in their natural lawn care. And people like that are the people that attend Green on the Green.
614-292-8513. We're looking for good recycling ideas. If you have one, give us a call or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You went to a conference last week called Zero Waste. What was that all about?
It was a Zero Waste Business Council and the Zero Waste International Alliance. And it's in its infancy. It happened to take place in Cincinnati, although the crux of it seems to be in California. But we've got actually Ohio is a very innovative state. We've got Procter & Gamble doing great things. Miller Coors doing great things. These were some of the presenters there. And it was just a conglomerate of ideas of bringing zero waste to landfill, no incineration, and nothing to the environment. So they're actually working on defining what does zero waste mean and making it consistent across the board, across worldwide.
And what does it mean? I mean, nothing to the landfill. Is that possible?
Well, zero waste, they want, here was the question they proposed. If you're not for zero waste, how much waste are you for? And then you think, well, I'm for no waste. So when you go throw something away, if you actually think about it, say, I'm throwing this away. Is this a resource? Is this something that can be recycled into something else? Is this something that maybe I could have purchased differently so that I'm not throwing this bag or whatever it is away? But this will obviously reduce landfill, divert items from going to landfill.
What's the difference? Where's the fine line between that way of thinking and hoarding?
Well, if we could, the overall definition of green living, in my definition, would be healthy, you know, thinking of your health, of yourself, your community, your environment. So if you are living in a hoarding house, you are not being healthy for yourself, probably not being healthy for your neighbors. So I don't think that falls into the umbrella. I think decluttering, consuming less is first. Consume less. And then when you're uncluttering your home, find places for those that they can be used as resources and not garbage.
What was something you learned at the Zero Waste Conference that surprised you?
I was surprised when Big Green Head went there and represented, and we're newbies, and we went to learn. And we're working on an initiative, a pilot program at an elementary school right now in Worthington, called the Do Green School Initiative, and we're trying to bring zero waste to the cafeteria. And we had a lot of questions from milk cartons. Are they able to be recycled? The polystyrene, people call styrofoam, food trays that they all use, can those go somewhere? And at least in attendance of this conference, there was nobody dealing with schools. It was all businesses. So that was very interesting to me. And people would come up to us at the break and try to help us with answers to our questions that we'd ask during the talks.
So what is this initiative with the schools? What do you mean by that?
Okay, so what we have kids doing is...
Kids throw away a lot of food.
They throw away a lot of food. They use a lot of plastic bags. So what we have them do is they approach a sorting station, and we're talking kindergarten to sixth graders. And, you know, the little ones, they're all getting it, though. It's been three full weeks. They approach the sorting station. They look at what they have in their lunchbox or on their tray, and they determine, does this go to the landfill? Does this go to the recycle bin? Is this organic material that we can put in a food scrap bin? And then we stack the styrofoam polystyrene trays at the end. And we've gone from 9 to 12 bags of landfill to 1.5 a day. And we, the first week, diverted 675 pounds of food scrap from that cafeteria. And that's just one elementary school, 1 week.
So what do you do with it?
The food scrap, we're partnered with Eartha Limited. They collect the food scrap from the school, and they take it up to Ohio Mulch, who is a composting processing plant, and they process it. And I brought a sample for you.
Is it all food scrap?
It's organic matter, so it's food, and they do have to mix in some brown matter, they call, to make these types of materials. They'll take anything you've seen compostable, dining items like cups and plates and spoons. If they're compostable, they can take those brown, you know, they can take paper, napkins, all those
but
items.
What about meat and that kind of thing?
Yes, they can take meat, eggs, bones. This is actually something that I could address right now. A lot of the questions I got was, oh, I thought composting was only fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, I can't do it in my backyard.
No, in your backyard, that's a different composting because you're not creating the heat that they can in these processing plants. It's a different process. It's done differently.
Uh-huh.
So and more quickly. So they can take on all of the proteins and bones and meat and cheese and dairy and all that stuff.
Okay. My guest is Karen Ferris. She's a blogger and founder of Big Green Head. We're looking for good ideas for recycling today. If you have one, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page. Coming up, we're going to talk about a really great idea for recycling that's spreading across the country, including in Central Ohio and in the Midwest especially. So hang on, we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
In Kenya, Mike Watson's enemy is equipped with AK-47s and probably night vision goggles. Sometimes the enemy is part of his own team, which tries to stop poachers from killing rhinos for their horns.
We've got people on the inside who are feeding information, which makes it doubly difficult to do the job.
Battling poachers today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on 89.7 NPR News. Explore the history and significance of the Bill of Rights. Watch Constitution USA, It's a Free Country, Tuesday night at 9 on WOSU-TV.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. There's something about a discarded mattress and box springs, especially in these days of bed bugs. No one wants a used bed, especially the landfill operators. And it looks crazy depressing on the side of the road. Still with us is Karen Ferris, founder of Big Green Head, and the one-day Green on the Green Festival in Worthington this weekend. For more information, go to greenonthegreen.com. Joining us now is John Gonas. He's a finance professor at Belmont University in Nashville. He's also president of the board of Springback Recycling, a nonprofit he created with his students to model economically viable ways to divert landfill waste. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also with us is Andrew Bloomfield. He's vice president of operations at Sleep Outfitters, a for-profit company that participates in the program. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, John, you created Springback Recycling with your students. What was the assignment? How did that happen?
2 years ago, I asked my students or tasked my students with the opportunity to create a business model around solid waste diversion. We wanted to see if there was actually a market for all the components of a used mattress. So the first thing we did was we tore open a mattress, looked inside, looked at the mattress is basically a pizza, if you will, or a sandwich with different layers. There's a cotton wool blend, there's metal, there's foam, there's an outer layer, which is foam, which is a mix of foam and polyester. And I tasked them with the opportunity to look into the scrap market and find out if there's a way to get that material baled and back into the market.
So what now then... Andrew Bloomfield, are you working with them or do the same thing on your own?
No, we are partners with both Springback and John's students. Okay. as the instrument that provides them the raw materials in an effort to be a better corporate citizen.
So how does it work? What do you do?
Well, primarily our business is mattress retail, and as a byproduct of mattress retail, you have the removal of an old mattress or a mattress that the customer no longer has a need for. And our partnership with John is based around the idea that we have a problem, which is the end-used mattresses and what that product becomes to us, which inevitably prior to our relationship with John, was either a landfill piece or a piece that enters the secondary market, which is a recovered product, which comes with it its own problems. Mm-hmm. So our partnership with John becomes the capture of all these used mattresses, and then we transport them to John's facility and the Springback location in Nashville, and all of our mattresses from the Columbus market, the Nashville market, Huntsville and Birmingham, Alabama, and Lexington, Kentucky are shipped to John's group in Nashville, and then they're deconstructed and recycled.
Do we have any sense about how many mattresses were being dumped in the landfills? Well, or are being still?
According to the International Sleep Products Association, which is a lobbying group out of Washington, D.C., and probably the best tracker of the mattress industry, they say that 30 million are dumped in the United States each year. I don't know in each geographic location. So we sought out to create a triple bottom line social enterprise, if you will, to not only divert the mattresses and ultimately get all 100% of everything in the mattress and box spring back into the salvage market, but also to provide employment for formerly incarcerated men. 50% of what Springback is enabling formerly incarcerated men to reenter the workforce and give them sustainable employment. So we try to create a triple bottom line social enterprise, if you will. And as Andrew said, we've been real fortunate to have a consistent flow coming in on deadhead trailers, so not to create a carbon footprint, coming in on backhaul lanes from this geographic region into Nashville. And we process about 400 to 500 a week right now.
That's pretty fast in 2 years to be now processing about 400 or 500 mattresses a week.
Yes, we just celebrated 30,000 last week. Andrew and the management of Sleep Outfitters IMS were actually there, and we're hoping to build it. We've actually licensed the model in other parts of the country. We have a Springback location in Denver now, and one just starting in Tacoma.
And there's others across the country that are trying to do the same thing.
There's about 30, and according to ISPA, there's about 12 of our size that do it. So this is not a very common practice.
Right. It's not common, but it's growing.
Right.
Andrew Bloomfield, what is it? What's in it for Sleep Outfitters?
Well, beyond the just the pure diversion of the raw materials from the landfill, which is the primary motivation for us, is the social enterprise which John spoke to, which involves the folks in Nashville who are involved physically in the deconstruction process. That's something that appealed to us about John's group and Springback in general terms, is not only are we creating solid waste diversion, which we are a byproduct of as you know, being in the retail chain, but beyond that, there is something about participating in a social endeavor that is bigger than our business. You know, we can sell mattresses all day, every day, in every city that we do business in, but if we're not becoming part of the market, part of the good that's being done in the markets that we do business in, we're just taking, and that's not really what our company is about.
Yeah, Kieran Ferris?
Andrew, excuse me. How do you let people know? Are you marketing the fact that you're doing this? Because if I was faced with a purchase, I assume that it's a courtesy for when you buy a mattress that they'll haul it away for free. But if I knew that the company I was buying from would haul it away and not put it to landfill, that would be, that's a tremendous sales tool, marketing tool for you guys.
I think it's something that we're wrestling with to try to honestly come up with a way to make it both visible and effective to the average consumer. There are absolutely customers like yourselves who are very passionate about it, and who the instant you mention it, it resonates and it becomes real, and it's a distinct advantage to shop at our store versus some other store. And then, you know, there are the sort of uninformed or the underinformed consumers who either don't understand what happens to that bed or don't really care. And it's those groups of consumers that we're sort of challenged with, and we've engaged some people to assist us in how to make that a more relevant part of what we do. But we do feature the Springback logo and a lot of the recycling pieces in our print and television. And we have some Facebook presence also that provides weekly updates on both the poundages and the sort of cubic volume that's diverted from the landfill as part of our endeavor. But it clearly is something that we are efforting towards on a daily basis to come up with a way that makes it relevant to every consumer.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about recycling today and different ways to recycle. Dr. John Gonis, he's the president of Springback Recycling. Also, Andrew Bloomfield, he's vice president of operations at Sleep Outfitters. And Kieran Ferris is a blogger and founder of Big Green Head. If you have a question or comment, if you have some ideas about recycling yourself, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Beth in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Beth.
Hi. Hold on a second. Oh, good. I have my speakerphone off. I just wanted to mention FreeCycle, if anybody's not aware about FreeCycle.
Free as in free as a bird cycle.
Yeah. Okay. They have Yahoo boards all over the U.S., and pretty much anything you could think of recycling that somebody might want, people will take. Even things you don't think people will take, they take. like dead mowing machines or dead washers, or yesterday I picked up a bunch of old felt sell pieces because I might use them for applique, or I might use them as filling for these 100% recyclable dog beds that I'm making.
Okay.
And another thing that I wanted to let people know about is Holy Craft has a sewing room in the basement, and that's where you can donate or pick up any kind of craft or sewing item. And it's just by donation what you think it would be worth for you.
Okay.
And they have all kinds of stuff there.
All right.
And then the last thing I wanted to mention was not to forget Habitat for Humanity's business that they, or nonprofit that they do.
Okay.
They have all kinds of cool things in there.
All right. Beth, thanks a lot for your ideas.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you have a question or an idea about recycling. John, what is the recycled material used for? Where does that go?
The metal is baled and goes to a foundry, so it ultimately gets reconstituted as new metal and goes to a melt. The foam inside the mattress and the outer layer gets ground and becomes the padding underneath a carpet. And so a lot of carpet companies are now using soiled foam as the carpet underlay. And then there's a thin layer of cotton and or wool blend or shoddy, if you will, and that typically goes to padding. And so that was one of the interesting things with what my students did, was scouring the market to find a home for all of those things. On the box spring, you have the wood,
mm-hmm.
and we scrape the metal off the wood, and the wood has a lot of metal in it, a lot of staples.
Okay.
And so we actually send that to a facility in East Nashville where it gets ground, and then the metal gets pulled out and becomes, so the metal gets recycled, and the wood goes to landscape mulch. So 100% of everything we take in is ultimately recycled.
Andrew Bloomfield, does this make you think about how you manufacture beds in the first place and how they could be manufactured to be more easily recycled?
I think it's something that we have presented to our manufacturing partners, both from the recycling side as well as their internal initiatives to begin to use greener foams inside of their product. Whether that be an organic foam, which would be a latex foam from the rubber tree, or it would be soy-based foams that are easily recyclable.
Because right now foams come from petroleum?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Absolutely. And you know, the shift in the industry over probably the last 10 years has been to a more foam-based mattress versus an innerspring mattress, which is the steel spring units. And so the more influence we have over the industry, both on the manufacturing side and through ISPA, which John mentioned, to lobby on our behalf to get in legislation or regulation on the avoidance of landfilling the end-use goods. So it becomes a cradle-to-grave initiative, really, for us to steer both the manufacturing side as well as the political entities in whether it's a state or a city or the country as a whole to begin to look at this as something that is important both to the consumers and to those folks that are in the retail and manufacturing side.
Yeah.
Karen. Excuse me. It's an interesting point you make about the question that you asked about, can you produce it in a way that makes it easier to recycle later? And it seems like the progression right now is we've created all this waste and we've taken it for granted. We've just send everything to landfill. Well, now we've got that problem. And at this point, we're just trying to solve the problem that we have in front of us. So the mattresses have always been made the same way. How do we fix the problem with the mattresses we have? And then the next step is, how do we manufacture things in a way that these problems get, the solutions are easier to come by?
And I think it's interesting that the deconstruction of products can create jobs as well.
Yes,
and, of course, you know, you have the double entendre of spring back. It's for humans as well as,
right.
Andy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
my wife, that she's quite of a hippie, and I never really recycled, but over the years, she's kind of turned me into a more green kind of guy. Yeah, she had come across an article, and I can't remember the particular magazine, but it mentioned a company, I believe at Grandview, that would take pretty much any metal item you had, bulk scrap, it didn't matter, as long as it didn't have any kind of refrigerant in it. And basically, you pull up in a pickup truck with everything in the back, they weigh you, you dump it off, they weigh you again, and they actually give you money.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We wound up, for whatever reason, with two dryers, a washer, and a hot water tank in our basement. And rather than having to pay someone to get rid of it, we managed to actually make a couple bucks, which is kind of nice.
The metal salvage places are certainly out there, and they're somewhat controversial because when you pay for metals, then what you have are people out trying to steal metals to sell.
We've dealt with that in the past with our air conditioning kit.
Okay. So both sides of the equation. But, Andy, thanks a lot. That's a good reminder. Thanks.
Okay, well, thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Alex in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Alex.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
I own a small business called Griffin Hollow Studio, and I started my business about a year ago over here at the Columbus Idea Foundry. And I just started tinkering around. I come from the Appalachian Hills, and I've seen some landfills, and it's quite disturbing what actually goes in there. So I started a company with the one goal of upcycling waste, which is to make it better than it was before. And I just think it's really cool that I turned on the radio this morning and was able to hear folks like this out there doing things locally and near us. And I was just hoping that there would be some sort of network created out of these stories, because it's been a long road trying to find partners and people that are on board with this. But it's a wonderful thing, and I really appreciate everyone there and what they do and sharing on these topics.
Karen Ferris?
If you contact me through the biggreenhead.com website, I would love to connect with you, and that's one of the things that we do is connect people together. And I think that what you're actually suggesting is needed in this community. So reach out to me, please.
Okay, Alex, thanks a lot for your call, and thanks for turning on the radio today and listening to us. We really appreciate it. I want to say thanks as well to Dr. John Gonas, president of Spring Back Recycling. Thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And also Andrew Bloomfield, vice president of operations at Sleep Outfitters. Thank you, Andrew, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Together, they work to recycle mattresses and box springs. So coming up, we're going to hear about another recycler, this one, an associate professor of art at Ohio State. We'll hear what she does when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from Varmint Guard Environmental Services, the company with the gold-lettered black trucks. Varmint Guard has served Central Ohio for 30 years, helping to treat and prevent pest and wildlife problems. More information at 614-794-8169 or varmintguard.com.
Tell me the story of us.
Again?
All right, Francis.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about the new film Frances Ha with director Noah Baumbach and actress Greta Gerwig. It's about a young woman in the transition from college student to adult, dealing with relationships with both men and women that are often ambiguous and open-ended. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
It's a never-ending quest for grass and water when 20,000 zebras begin an epic journey. Watch Nature Great Zebra Exodus Wednesday night at 8 on WOSU-TV.
When you support 89.7 NPR News at the annual level of $85, our gift to you is the WOSU Public Media Member Card. The Member Card is good for dining and admission discounts at more than 200 Member Card partners in and around Central Ohio. Save money and support 89.7 NPR News with the WOSU Member Card. Make a gift of $85 or more. Visit us now at wosu.org/membercard for more information.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Composting seems to be one of those things you either embrace religiously or not at all. Maybe you're still in love with your garbage disposal, or maybe it's too much work, especially in the dead of winter, to haul your vegetable refuse to the composter in the backyard. But did you ever think of it as art? Still with us is Karen Ferris, founder of Big Green Head and the one-day Green on the Green Festival in Worthington this weekend. For more information, go to greenonthegreen.com. Joining us now is Amy Youngs. She's an OSU art professor who taught a course during spring semester this year that explains how to design furniture with the compost cycle in mind. Amy's work has been exhibited nationally and internationally, and her essays about art and biology have been published in Leonardo and Nouvel Objet. She was awarded an Individual Artist Fellowship Grant from the Ohio Arts Council in 2002. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Thank you very much for having me.
We were so excited when we found out there was an artist in our midst who likes to recycle.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Beyond the regular collage type of thing. Yeah. What you taught this spring is how to build vermiculture furniture, vermiculture having to do with worms.
Yes. Actually, I got to co-teach it with an architect and another artist. So KB Jones in architecture and Anne Silverman, who's an artist. And we decided to do this as an experiment to find out whether or not students could come up with more interesting ways to integrate recycling into our everyday lives by creating interesting kinds of furniture that would work well with their own lives. So they actually made projects like grandfather clocks that had worms in them and a whole coffee bar recycling system so that you could recycle your coffee grounds right on site and then use the compost that would result. Well, there were worms in there too. And the compost that would result would then feed a coffee plant. So there were some really creative projects that the students made.
You refer to worms as a potential part of the intestines of a home, which I thought was kind of interesting because our homes are kind of always consuming themselves. There's always sort of this larger macro kind of breakdown going on, but we don't always see it so obviously.
Yeah, I like to think about living systems in my work and how I can integrate living systems more closely into my world. I love plants, and then I think about where do the nutrients to those plants come from, and indeed they come from the soil, and that's pretty much what worms make. So it was a pretty clear connection then for me to be able to have worms generating the nutrients to grow plants.
So what does some of this furniture actually look like? Can you describe it? Radio is not the ideal forum for this conversation, but can you maybe describe a grandfather clock with worms in it? How does that work?
Well, the student was really interested in the time-based qualities of recycling and thought that that space of the grandfather clock was pretty unused now with electronics really running our clocks, so that big space was a space where you could keep worms. So that's what we were doing, is thinking about how do you just find spaces where recycling can happen. And worms is actually, you might not think of it, but it's a pretty incredible way to recycle your food. It's the most efficient way, much more efficient and better for the environment than traditional composting because it doesn't produce methane gas. So that's one thing. But a lot of the art projects that I had done in the past are things like a table that would you could eat your food and then open up a portal in the center and put your food waste right there where you're eating. And then the worms in the center of the table would be eating and devouring the food. At the bottom of the table, you could then take out the compost. So over time, you'd be able to get the compost out of the bottom and then feed plants with it. And then in addition, you could watch the worms on a closed circuit television.
If you're really into that.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is that you're eating with the worms and the compost cycle is very clear to you, and where your food comes from becomes much more clear as you're enjoying your meal with the worms at the table.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Amy Youngs. She's an associate professor of art at Ohio State and with a team of instructors spent the spring semester teaching how to build furniture or how to design furniture with the compost cycle in mind. If you have a question or comment for her, if you have a great idea about recycling that you want to share, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Also with us in the studio, Karen Ferris, blogger and founder of Big Green Head. We have a email from Kelly. She says, one thing I've done is eliminating paper towels in my house by using cloth napkins. I've also stopped buying makeup application sponges. Now I have one that comes in my cosmetic compact, and I wash it out with soap and water when I finish applying cosmetics. I've been using cloth napkins for years, Kelly, and everybody thinks I'm fancy, but I'm really not. And in the email from Sarah, what do I do with old clothes that are too ragged and stained to donate to Goodwill? Is there textile recycling in Columbus, Ohio? Karen Ferris, any ideas?
Yes, actually. I had the pleasure of touring the Goodwill plant a few weeks back, and they are one of the largest recyclers of cotton and fabric. So if you turn something in, they diligently go through it and separate what can be resold for profit, and the rest is baled and recycled. So send it to Goodwill, unless it's soiled.
Goodwill will recycle.
They will recycle.
With Goodwill. Okay. Judy in Lancaster, you've been waiting a long time. Hi, Judy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thank you. It's a wonderful program. In my daily life, I work really hard at recycling and speaking the language of recycling. I'm a retired healthcare provider, and so everywhere I go, I try to speak that language. My real frustration is styrofoam everything. Did I miss something? Is there a use? Is there a way to handle the styrofoam?
Karen Ferris.
The styrofoam, a couple of things about styrofoam. There's no way, first of all, you don't want to put it in your recycle bin because they don't take it. You also, the problem with styrofoam going to landfill is it blows all around and creates all kind of garbage.
And that's a big problem at landfills.
Yeah, that's a big problem. People don't think about it. It's lightweight. It blows around.
Styrofoam is used a lot in construction, I learned.
Okay.
And there's a lot of refuse from construction, like building construction.
Well, and the styrofoam, which technically is called polystyrene, but everyone knows it as styrofoam, you can recycle it when it's not a food item. So, but if it's something that's touched food, there's no process in place right now that we can all take it somewhere and have it to be recycled. However, as I mentioned before, we're in the cafeteria right now, and they eat off of the styrofoam trays, and we collect hundreds of them every day. And we are working with someone because if we can collect them and even just lightly clean them off, they can then either be compressed, all the air compressed out of them, and they turn into this solid cube of polystyrene, or melted, and it is a commodity and can be sold to someone who then will make it into a product. The problem is there's nothing in place to collect and recycle them for the general public.
And which means to get it in the volume that makes it...
Exactly. Yes, because you don't even want to send a truckload of uncompressed polystyrene because it weighs nothing, and the fuel to get it to where it needs to be isn't really cost effective for the final product.
Okay. Well, good question, Judy. Thanks for that. Right now, there's no good answer yet.
The good answer is try not to use the styrofoam.
Mm-hmm.
Use something else.
614-292-8513. We still have a little bit of time left if you want to call in with your idea or questions about recycling. Amy Youngs, just going back to the table thing real quickly, I have other questions. What about smell?
Good question.
Let's see, odor.
Actually, the wonderful thing about composting worms is that they eat the bacteria that makes smells. So even if you happen to have stinky lettuces or things from your fridge that you put in there, they'll quickly turn that into something odorless, and they don't actually smell. It turns out it doesn't smell worm composting.
Is there any special kind of worm that you use?
They're red wiggler worms.
Okay.
They're top feeders, and they just so happen to be the perfect kind of worm to domesticate.
Are they actually red? And when they wiggle, do you see?
Yes.
It's like there's this motion involved too.
Yeah. The thing is, they don't actually like light though.
No.
So when you open up their container, they actually go to the bottom. It's a little bit difficult to see them.
What kind of What kind of education did you have to give the students to approach the art combined with the vermiculture? Did they have to learn, you know, like different layers of, you know, because I know that there's more to it with where the food goes in and how much you can have in there that they can eat and moisture and all those things.
Yeah, we did. We did talk with them about that. I've been vermiculture. I've been doing vermiculture for many years, so I know a lot about how to do it. And they're very forgiving, actually. So there's a few rules of thumb about how much food to give them. And we did have experts come in and speak with them. We have a lot of great experts at Ohio State, but also had a visit with Rhonda Sherman, who is a waste management specialist. And
how did you, when did you first look at garbage and not see it like garbage, but art?
I used to do a lot of art with recycled materials, and I just felt that it was a good way for me to be environmentalist. And I've always been a bicycle rider and somebody who thinks about those things. But the waste that I produce felt like something that could be then turned into beautiful plants and flowers and something that I could enjoy. And it made me feel very much more connected to living systems.
I was going to say it's important to you to create work that explores that relationship between, you know, ourselves and the world around us.
Yes.
And sees how it changes and...
Yes. One of the projects that I did with my husband, Ken Rinaldo, was what's called aquaponics, where we grew our plants indoors, edible plants, herbs, tomatoes, and things. And then we also, at the same time, grew fish that would produce the nutrients to feed the plants. So we did this indoors and then, in the end, got to eat the fish. So there was this sense of the food waste, too. We also had worms in this system. The food waste that we were producing was helping to then produce the plants that we were eating and then the fish. So, and the fish were part of the system in that they were producing the waste
kind of
for
fish?
The plants. Tilapia fish. They were
delicious.
Delicious, yes. They're delicious and produce a lot of waste. And then the plants were also cleaning the water, so it wasn't a kind of aquaculture system that would require a lot of water changes and filtration.
Chris wrote on Facebook, "I love recycling and repurposing. Next week I will be turning a large wood pallet into a screen door, and you won't be able to tell it was a pallet when I'm done."
Excellent.
That's pretty cool, Chris. From Max in Italian Village, "My wife and I are both very interested in the green movement and enthusiastic, though our time is limited. Since Columbus has made recycling available to us with their nifty blue bins, our ability to recycle has drastically increased. I think one key factor that cannot be overemphasized in this movement is making recycling and reusing readily accessible and convenient for consumers so that they might actually participate," which is kind of what the show's all about. So, Max, thanks a lot for, kind of reiterating that. Amy Young's, is the sort of, you know, art and the sort of furniture that you create in a class like this something that's easy for most of us to have?
Well, that was part of the interesting idea. For me, it's easy to have. I actually do have an art project in my office that is also a worm composting unit. And it's quite beautiful. It grows beautiful plants, and we all know that plants make our environment nicer and make us healthier, too. So with the class, the idea was to figure out what would be easy for other people to have. And so we really let the students decide what was the kind of thing that would fit well into their own lives.
Okay.
So the coffee bar system was something that student felt was perfect for him. He could drink coffee and then recycle it immediately.
Can I propose a high chair? That would be a good one.
Very
That's
good.
A great idea.
See, my dog was my recycler on that score. She got a little overweight at the time, but it worked for us. Whatever was thrown from the table.
That's right.
To the floor. Okay. Joe in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. Thank you.
I always enjoy your show.
Thanks.
I told your screener that I think there's two types of recyclers, the proactive and like basically your guest. And then there's me, the reluctant recycler. It's got to be easy. And It's got to be convenient, or I'm much less likely to do it. And at the, 25 years ago, before my wife and I just married and we had kids, or we hadn't had kids, we were recycling cans and bottles and plastic, but there was, we still put them down to the curb, and we quickly realized that it was all going the same place. Well, our company, Waste Management, a couple of years ago sent out a letter wanting to know if we'd be willing to pay $8 a month to, for them to take our recyclables, in which I wrote on the letter, no, and sent it back. Because they make a huge amount of money off recyclables, I'm not going to pay them to make even more money off of it. So eventually they sent out the bins, and nobody's being charged. So we do recycle, but like I said, it's got to be convenient or easy. I'm just too busy otherwise.
Well, we're still kind of at that stage. Joe, thanks a lot for your call, because that's the kind of person, and you're the kind of person Karen and I were talking about earlier. You're just not quite there yet for one reason or another.
Right. Yeah. And we're and that's the thing, is we're going to make it convenient. I think that that's understandable. I mean, even for the three of us sitting in this room, everyone's busy. And if we can set up systems and, you know, even just like our household so that it's convenient to recycle, we're more apt to do it.
Real quick question. Are there blueprints available for any of the compost furniture?
I believe that one of the students has his blueprints, yes, online. Okay. And we're actually working on a book that we're going to be making for it. But I also have blueprints for the digestive table project that I spoke about on my website.
Okay.
And anyone's welcome to build that. There are also more simple worm bin systems that I've designed, since most people emailed me saying, I don't really need the whole table, but I really would like a simple worm bin that would fit in my kitchen. So if anybody searches worm bin bag online, there's a whole set of instructables to build that.
The decorative. I've seen the worm bins, but I bet you could do something really creative just to make them seem more part of your decoration, the way that you decorate your house.
Yes. Yes.
Well, Amy Youngs, we will direct people to your website. Amy Youngs, Associate Professor of Art at Ohio State, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
And Kieran Ferris, blogger and founder of Big Green Head, thanks for joining us today, Kieran.
Thank you, Ann.
There's all kinds of websites on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.